Welcome to Faith and Family. I'm your host, Andy Bates, and having a great day, even though it's a little gloomy outside. We've got great guests in the studio today to talk about an important topic as we're heading back to school. We're going to be talking about bullying today here on Faith and Family, and trying to define what that means and how to respond to it, how to prevent it, all those important things as we look at returning to school. Here on Faith and Family, we want to say thanks to our underwriter, Concordia University, Wisconsin. If you'd like to find out more about Concordia University, Wisconsin, just visit our website, KFUOAM.org. Go to the sponsor section and click on the Concordia University, Wisconsin logo there, and that'll take you to their page. You can learn all about them. Today, joining us in the studio, and we also will have a guest joining us in a little while by phone here at Faith and Family. Joining us in the studio today is Byron Devereaux with Lutheran Family and Children's Services. Welcome, Byron.
Thank you.
And also joining us from Lutheran Family and Children's Services would be Jenna Nelson.
Thanks.
And from the Dean of Students from Lutheran South High School here in St. Louis, Dan Harms. Welcome, Mr. Harms.
Thank you.
Even walking into the building, he's well known. The students know him here in the building. So, well, welcome to Faith and Family today as we're talking about bullying. Also joining us in just a few minutes, we'll be having one of our friends from Friends to the North, actually. One of our friends from Courage for Youth, Gary Brooker from Courage for Youth, will be joining us here shortly on Faith and Family. Let's see if Gary is there with us. Gary, are you with us?
I'm here.
Welcome, Gary. Gary is the program director at Courage for Youth and joining us on the phone from Kelowna, British Columbia. British Columbia. Did I get that right?
You got it right.
Excellent. Joining us in the studio, we've got some staff from Lutheran Family and Children's Services, Byron Devereaux, Jenna Nelson, and Dan Harms, Dean of Students at Lutheran South High School here in St. Louis. And we are here to talk about bullying today. So let's start with a definition. Let's start with a working definition of bullying. And we'll start with Byron. What can you give us just, and we can build on that. We can work around the room and go to Gary as well to build our definition and modify it if we need to. Byron, how would you define bullying?
Bullying is unwanted aggressive behavior among school-aged children that's repetitive, and then it involves real or perceived power imbalance. Again, the behavior is repeated or has the potential to be repeated over time.
Jenna?
Yeah, I would agree. And I think to get more specific, it kind of breaks down into three categories: verbal bullying, social bullying, and physical bullying. So I think we've done a real good job of kind of trying to differentiate between those three.
And Gary, what would you say is, what is the working definition that you work with at Courage for Youth?
Using the same definitions as Byron and Jenna, and including the breaking down of the categories, though we're really seeing it as it's a struggle, I think, in terms of it's such a common term right now, and people are not operating, are not operating from the same definition often, and it's sometimes even an overused term, I think, in terms of trying to define a problem. It's just a sort of, it's become a catch-all for a whole bunch of different behaviors, at least here in our part of the world, and I don't think it's much different there in yours. But
and Dan, would you say, is that a similar definition to what you see and use in schools and especially in school policy?
Absolutely, and I agree with Gary 100% that the term is being overused, and it's sometimes the term is attributed to behavior that is just dynamics between two students and they have a disagreement. So I like the definitions I'm hearing today.
And I guess I should probably backtrack a little bit and give everybody a chance to understand how each of you are working, how you work with youth and bullying in your fields. Byron and Jenna, you both work in Lutheran Family and Children's Services, and I understand, Byron, you also are in a school as well. Tell us a little bit about what you do and then how that pertains to the topic today as well.
Okay. I'm a school-based counselor, mental health professional at Lutheran High School North in St. Louis, Missouri. And a lot of my work is collaborating with the administration, the parents, students, the community. And just past last year, we formed an anti-bullying pledge that our students and parents have to review and sign each year, discussing the three breakdown components of bullying and what that means and what we're you know, what we don't want to see at North.
And Jenna?
I'm in the same program as Byron through Lutheran Family and Children's Service. And I'm currently at University City High School Alternative School, and then I've had a lot of experience at the Lutheran Elementary School level. And so really just the same as Byron has stated, is that we really try to be a part of bully prevention in any of the environments we work in, and there's just a variety of ways to do that.
Okay, great. And Gary, you're with Courage for Youth. Tell us a little bit about what you do with Courage for Youth and what the organization is about.
The organization has actually been around for about 10 years, and it's really wanting to empower children and teens and give them more tools. And we also work with parents and school staffs, administrations. Our two main programs are actually on the preventative side of bullying in terms of Voices, a program for grade 3s and grade 5s, and then our anti-bullying, but it's really prevention, is a program called SCREAM, which is not scream in a scary way, but screaming your life in a powerful way, and not only using your voice, but using all that God's given you to use your strengths to be a person of an integrity and courage. And so what SCREAM program really does, and Voices, tries to get into the schools. SCREAM is for grade 6s and grade 7s. Here in Canada, to give some foundational blocks for kids in relationship building, in trying to break down some of the, some of the very barriers that cause bullying behavior in the first place, but also to really build some empathy skills. Because one of the things we do know on the topic of bullying is that if somebody has empathy for another person, it's almost impossible to carry out bullying behavior against them.
So, you really work. It's a nonprofit. It's an organization. It's not necessarily specifically a school, or is it affiliated with anyone specifically, or who?
No. It's actually made up of educators and counselors. That our main goal is to get into the classrooms and run character building curriculum and leadership curriculum, like I said, grade 3, 5, 6, and 7 students at a foundational level. And so we work with, I work specifically with school administrations, with parent councils, with teachers, to get the program into schools. And then SCREAM in particular is 15 hours of curriculum time, program time with the kids, and dealing with topics that I sort of touched on earlier. To again try to build some foundational skills in these kids that would diffuse things before they happen. One of the things that is probably fairly common is that there's so many anti-bullying programs out there, and very few can say that they've had great success. And it's almost like putting a Band-Aid on something that you got to get to the core of the problem. The core of the problem really is about relationship and understanding and empathy. And my background, by the way, I am also a church worker. I work at First Lutheran Church and School in Kelowna, British Columbia, where I've been on staff for 20 years. And one of my passions have been working with both teens and with parents to equip them to be the best parents, the best teens, in terms of what God's given them to be. But when this organization, Courage for Youth, approached me to be a part of their program, to get into public schools and to do some work with children and parents and teens, I just saw such a wide open door for an opportunity to make a difference on the prevention and preventative end. And so that's sort of our goal is education. Our goal is to work on the front end rather than in reaction to what's going on.
So you work with Courage for Youth, and that puts you in that organization puts you in some public schools, and then also you work at a church as well.
Yeah, I'm half time at both places. So.
Okay, and Dan Harbs, we were talking about school administrators here just a little bit ago, and that would be you, right?
Correct.
What is your role at Lutheran South High School and with the association?
Well, my role at Lutheran High School South specifically is I'm pretty much involved in all parts of the process, from the beginning of the process when we are made aware of a problem, and then of course there's making the decision what is the degree of the problem, I'm also involved in the consequences for the behavior referral to appropriate resources. And lastly, we have an excellent opportunity at a school such as Lutheran South and Lutheran North. We can bring in the power of God's Word and the power of prayer. And we really look for long-term resolutions and to try to make it a teaching moment, not only for the victim, but also for the perpetrator to make sure the behavior is not repeated.
Mm-hmm. So we've got all the professionals. We've got a bunch of professionals, a good handful here, four professionals today to talk about bullying. If you would like to join the conversation and you're in the St. Louis area, you can call us at 314-821-0850. If you're outside of the St. Louis area, you can call us at 1-800-730-2727. You're also welcome to email your questions or comments to family@kfuo.org. I'd like to go back to the beginning. We had a working, you know, we've got kind of a definition of bullying, and certainly the word aggression comes up in there. But I'd like to talk about where bullying begins. How does it start? Jenna, could we start with you, and then we'll build on that and go around the room here. Where does bullying begin, Jenna?
Yeah, unfortunately, it begins in the early years of childhood, and we see that in the schools quite often at younger and younger ages. But unfortunately, sometimes bullying can occur in the home as well, and you'll see children that come to school and who are aggressive towards other kids have had someone being aggressive towards them as well, and so that's really kind of a larger picture problem.
Okay. Byron, do you want to build on that with anything?
Yeah, I would echo what Jenna said. I would say there's many environmental factors. The home, a home where violence is accepted and used as a means of solving disputes is one that might create bullying. Community, much of our learned behaviors is due to social norms of our community and what goes on around us. Technology, you know, now we have, you know, at the click of a finger, you know, Facebook, Instagram, and a lot of things that we didn't have 10, 20 years ago. Also school. I would say 75-80% of bullying occurs in the school. Students are pressured for a competition to fit into social groups or to mold to be with certain cliques, and some students are excluded or left out, which is another form of bullying as well.
Gary, where would you say bullying begins? What starts the snowball, if you will?
I definitely think there's a huge modeling factor here in terms of both behavior that is seen, observed, experienced, and then accepted in terms of living that out. So I think often kids experience, children who experience bullying in the home or early in activities in their life, we know they are often the ones that are the perpetrators later on. It's a learned behavior. It's a behavior that becomes acceptable for them as a way of dealing with frustration and to exert power.
So it's a learned behavior that comes from modeling certainly youth or children see in their parents. Dan, you and I were talking a little bit before the show about this, about how quite often kids can move quickly from, you know, can work these things out. But when it comes to adults, it doesn't get rectified so quickly.
That's very true. My experience is if you can identify the problem, and again, there's different levels of bullying. I'm talking not the extreme cases. If you can bring the two children into the room, start off the meeting with prayer, let them air it out with adult supervision, they are much more likely to get past it than sometimes their parents. I'd also like to add one other thing. I agree that environment is very big factor, but I would not also discount nature or temperament. Having been at my school for a while, I've seen two siblings from the same family behave a certain way, and then the third one, it's like they're from Mars or something. So nature does have a role in this dynamic also.
Gary, so what are your thoughts on that, the nature and nurture?
There's no dispute for me that our human nature is very much a part of all our failures. And, in our human flesh, our weakness, I think where that becomes an acceptable behavior is where we see it being repeated over and over again. And that's where I think when we see a behavior like bullying, and again, we keep in mind there's all sorts of different levels and different kinds of bullying. I think, and I would like at some point to discuss with my colleagues here the new level of it that we see being exerted with social media, with when you can hide behind a text, when you can send emails, when you can show up on Facebook and send messages that we just haven't seen in the past. So it's taking it to a whole new level. But I think that there is no dispute for me that the human element of our sinful nature in bullying is there. But, you know, what makes this any difference? What makes bullying different than any other mean-hearted, mean-spirited, wrong behavior? I'm not sure there is, other than it somewhat becomes an acceptable norm for some to use over and over.
Well, let's go to that. We were talking about, you brought up the topic of social media and how that influences and really kind of creates an exponential situation here. How does social media impact bullying? You know, Byron's mentioned it already. What role does it play in bullying and making it, I guess, grow exponentially? Byron?
I would just say how now bullying doesn't have to be direct face-to-face contact. There's a lot of, at some of the schools in St. Louis, we have iPads. There's a lot of Instagram messages, text messages, things of that sort, excluding. And even to the point of someone might make a Instagram post or a Facebook post and that's derogatory and someone likes it. That's kind of that indirect bullying that occurs that you might not think it affects the individual, but, it does.
Yeah, and I would also add, just to piggyback on what Byron said, it really takes the personalization out of the attack to not have to see someone's reaction when you say something hurtful and upsetting. I also think it feeds into the mob mentality of bullying because, like Byron said, when you can like a comment or, agree with someone's attack on someone else, it really, without much effort, can get a whole group of people, ganging up on someone else.
Sure, it's real easy to click on something and not even really think about what the ramifications would be for that. Sure, it's not going to mean much for me, but what does that mean for everyone else who's looking at it? What does it mean for the person that's taking a jab at as well? How do you deal with that in a school setting, Dan? How do you deal with social media? I'm sure that social media has just made your job 1,000 times harder in the last decade.
Well, yes and no. Being two generations ahead of everybody else in the studio, I'm going to use my personal experience as a segue into the topic. I'll have a student come to me very upset because someone said, well, they defriended me on Facebook. And my response as an old codger is, so? because of my generation and my technological expertise, their experience has no value in my life. But I have to respect it and empathize with that student. And the segue is one of the things I think we try to teach our children is when we attach value to a bully, we let them have power over us. We give them, if you will, free rent in our head. And so I think what all of us try to do in our own ways is to try to help the person that's being bullied, let them know that they can be empowered and how can we help them devalue the bully. The last thing is I'd like to emphasize that the behavior hasn't changed. The medium has, the way they do it now. When I first started, The main medium was notes folded in triangles on notebook paper. Now they post it, and it has made it a little more complicated. But the good news is we now have a record. We can now work backwards.
It's documented.
Yes,
yeah.
So it's kind of a good news, bad news thing from my position.
It makes it easier for everybody else to see, but at least you have a record of it so you can deal with it.
Correct.
A little more. Gary, what are your thoughts on social media?
I actually have a question for my colleague.
Sure.
Are you seeing sort of even an acceptance of that, though, even amongst teens and children, that it just be it's almost like an acceptable behavior to be able to, say, if someone posts a YouTube video of themselves or a project, and they open themselves up, and it's almost accepted that, well, people are going to say mean things. People are going to either like it or they're going to hate it. They're going to either like you or hate you, and that's just an acceptable behavior. And again, maybe not so much in your Lutheran setting, but certainly in society in general.
I know I see it, especially at my school and in the community. It's become the norm, whether it's because of, you know, communities, you know, violence, you know, the video games. It's okay. I'll hear students say, you know, it's okay, you know, for something that's negative or, you know, not healthy for their emotional well-being. Yeah.
It's okay because I see it in TV. I see someone else doing it. It's okay because I see it happening somewhere else, whether it be at home next door or on TV. Therefore, it's okay.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's a whole term of haters. You know, are you hating on me? Are you? And the question I've come to ask when I work with teens in grade sixes and sevens specifically is, can you dislike something or someone without hating them? It's almost like this personalization. Like I took it to an example of my own daughter in grade six in a Lutheran school here, making a project that she was pretty proud of on her iPad and posted on YouTube, video commercial. And it was sort of innocuous, but there was all of a sudden people of all age groups making comments. Either they liked it or they hated it. But there was even like, you should go die. I mean, this is a 12-year-old girl doing a project for school. When I present that in a public school, it's like, well, she put herself out there. People are going to either like her or hate you. It's almost this acceptable behavior. And I think you're right. There's a huge media component of this is what is right and what's wrong, and there just often isn't. There's this loss of that there are absolute rights and wrongs, and, you know, hating someone should fall in that category of wrong.
So social media, in a sense, is really a virtual public. There really isn't much protection. You're vulnerable when you put information or when you put anything out on social media. It's a virtual public. Anybody can see it. Anybody can comment on it. Anybody can say anything they want based in most places, in most social media settings. And so that really is kind of it's like the public arena. There's a great opportunity for you're set up for bullying very easily.
Yeah, I think, you know, in the past, in that situation I just talked of, if you did something in the classroom and made a presentation, your classmates could either like it or not, but they'd have to look at you in the face and either call you a name on the playground or, you know, there's that kind of direct interaction. I agree with my colleagues, when you can remove the personal aspect of it and become hidden behind a screen name or not have to face the person, you become much more bold and brave.
Mm-hmm.
And, sure. I think one of the power players in the whole discussion of bullying is really sort of the third component, which is the bystander, those that sort of watch it happen, those that become the acceptors of what's going on. And they have a lot of power in terms of what, in terms of stopping certain behavior, I believe.
Absolutely. We're going to continue the discussion here on Faith and Family as we're talking about bullying. We've got some great professionals today to discuss the topic. We'll continue right after this break.
Hi, I'm Pastor Doug Nicely. We forget sometimes that St. Paul was Jewish and he wasn't a Protestant like many of us are. St. Paul wrote to the Galatians, "We ourselves who are Jews by birth and not Gentile sinners, yet we know that a person is not justified by the works of the law, but through faith in Jesus Christ." And that's an important statement for St. Paul to make, an important reality that he had to learn. We all need to learn it anew. And we're going to talk about that this week on In His Steps.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
The former head of the United Nations Population Fund is Nafis Sadiq. She headed the effort back in the 90s at the UN to change terminology of population control to reproductive rights. This means they now promote abortion on demand to control the population of poor third world countries. 20 years later, she addressed International Planned Parenthood. In her speech, she lamented making no further progress in her pro-abortion agenda during the last two decades. "We get pushback from just about every part of the world," Ms. Sadiq said. This pro-life success is in spite of nearly $2 billion spent by the UN last year to push this agenda. It's due to the organized grassroots pro-lifers throughout the world who sacrifice so much to protect women and their unborn babies.
Check out Life Issues on Facebook and stay more informed than you've ever been.
Concordia University, Mequon, Wisconsin, overlooks the beautiful shoreline of Lake Michigan. This serene main campus of CUW is just 15 miles north of Milwaukee with all its vibrant cultural attractions. At Concordia University, Wisconsin, students living by the motto of inspiration in action can choose from 69 undergraduate majors, 14 master degree programs, and doctorates in pharmacy, physical therapy, and nursing practice. For more information or to take a virtual tour, visit cuw.edu.
"You used to change my diapers.
Take care of me 24 hours a day.
Send me to school.
Mom.
Dad, I need you.
There's all these things I'm feeling that I've never felt before.
I need to know about having a boyfriend.
I need you to set limits.
I need you to tell me where you stand.
Help me make the right choices.
Mom, Dad, talk with me. You always say I can talk to you about anything."
A message from the Missouri Department of Health and Senior Services.
Hi, I'm Mark Hawkinson, extending a warm invitation for you to join me for Moments of Assurance each weekday from noon to 1 p.m. on Worldwide KFUO. Each day I'll share scriptural encouragement along with practical thoughts, humor, trivia, news items, wonderful Christ-centered songs and hymns. It's a great spiritual recipe for your noontime hour. So join me, won't you? That's Moments of Assurance, underwritten in part by Mid-American Coaches and Children's Christian Concern Society, an LCMS recognized service organization.
The family of an American tour operator and Christian missionary who's been detained in North Korea for the past 9 months is renewing calls for his release as concerns about his health mount. Kenneth Bay was arrested last November and has been sentenced to 15 years of hard labor. His sister, Terry Chung, says,
"I think his personal convictions and his beliefs as a Christian, I think, might have been deemed as having been perhaps hostile acts."
She says his recent letters home have portrayed troubling health conditions, but
he's reassuring us to hold on and don't worry. I'm remaining strong and hopeful and, you know, holding on to my faith.
Bay's family is planning a prayer vigil at a Seattle church on Saturday.
We do want the community to come out and show support for him, and also to pray for his health and for his release. But we are also trying to raise more awareness of his plight.
I'm Steve Coleman.
Welcome back to Faith and Family. I'm your host, Andy Bates, and today we are discussing the topic of bullying. We have joining us in the studio our friends from Lutheran Family and Children's Services, Byron Devereaux and Jenna Nelson. On the phone, joining us from Kelowna, British Columbia, and Courage for Youth, Gary Brooker, and also in the studio, Mr. Dan Harms, joining us from Lutheran High School South here in St. Louis, as we discuss this important topic of bullying. Before we went to break, we were talking about how social media affects this issue of bullying and how it can kind of amplify it in a little bit. And then over the break, we were talking about parents and their role in bullying. And we talked about a variety of ways that parents are a part of this, whether it be modeling the example, or now let's talk about what parents can do if they suspect that their child may be the bully And we'll also talk about what parents can do if they are if they suspect their child is being bullied. But let's start with what to do if you suspect your child might be the bully. What are some signs that your child might be the bully? Jenna, is it all right if we start with you? What are some signs and that your child might be the one that's doing the bullying, and how do you handle that as a parent?
Sure. I guess I would just say any kind of aggressive behavior, whether it's socially aggressive or physically aggressive, would definitely be a warning sign. Parents oftentimes try to keep in good communication with other parents when these incidences are occurring. So if another parent has a concern about the way that your child is treating their child, I would say listen and be open-minded, to the fact that something could be going on. Gosh, it's just a difficult, difficult situation to deal with.
Yeah. Gary, what would you say what do you have to say to parents who suspect that their child, or what are they looking for if they think that their child might be the perpetrator here?
Well, I think in the world in which we live, one of the things that we're seeing with the proliferation of social media, but also of technology, I've talked to parents both in your country and ours, there's almost this entitlement of kids that think that they have this privacy, that, their cell phones are their own, their email accounts are their own, their Facebook accounts, well, even at 13 or 14 years old, that my parents have no right to any part of that. One of the roles that I have is to encourage parents to say, you're very responsible for your children and for guiding them as they go. And so if you're suspecting things, one of the things you need to do, you kind of need to be in their face a little bit. You kind of need to be a part of their life in a way that says, let's see it. Because you're going to see those behaviors often in their use of their social media. That's where we're seeing it here, at least, when emails that are sent, text messages that are sent, Instagram things that are being sent. And so it's being involved in a way that you can actually approach it. That would be sort of step one for me, is if you're suspecting it, check it out.
If you suspect it, investigate more.
Absolutely.
Dan?
Yes, in our orientation meetings for new parents, we emphasize that parents must gain control over the technology in their homes, and that they need to make it clear that anything electronic is just as accountable and open to observation as any other behaviors in the household, and the data clearly supports that.
Parents play a key role in this, obviously, and all of you have mentioned that parents have to be able to have to confidently step up to the plate. I wonder where this thinking comes from, that this entitlement that we were talking about, that some kids would say, you have no right to be looking at my, what's going on my Facebook page. You have no right to be looking at, looking into what I'm doing online. And the parents that follow that same way of thinking, oh, you're right, I shouldn't be looking in that, that's your, where does this originate? And I don't know if any of us have the answer to it, but when do we start thinking that that's what's going to be best for a child? What is the origin of that? I don't know. Jenna?
I think what it kind of stems from is just a very individualized approach to everything. That's my Facebook account, my Facebook page, that's my cell phone. I think parents are giving kids access to a cell phone and saying, this is your phone. And therefore, it kind of feeds into the idea that those are my messages, those are my posts, and that sort of thing. So I think that's where it starts.
We live in a very individualistic society. I know here, I'm guessing North America in general is a lot like that. Would you agree, Gary?
Yeah, for sure. And I think even taking a step back, even if parents might not suspect bullying, I think it's important for them to be involved in their kids' technology.
Mm-hmm.
As Dan was saying, I think that's a great policy for his school. It's almost like you need to give parents the permission to be involved. And I think there's two things sort of involved here. One is, some of them feel it's like their diary. Mm-hmm. What I do there is kind of my private thoughts. Well, if you need a diary, that's something different. That's for you, not to be put out in the public like that.
Right. Yeah, there's a big difference. A diary is something that you keep to yourself. Facebook or any other social media is for everybody else to read. Yeah.
Absolutely. The second part of that is, I think a lot of parents, me included, are intimidated by the amount of technology knowledge that our children have. They're often one, two, three, five steps ahead of us in terms of where they can go, what they can erase, who they can deal with before we know what's going on. So there's many parents I talk to that said, I'd just rather not deal with it. And then so they don't. And I think, you know, some of the higher profile cases, both in your country and in ours, in terms of bullying gone drastically wrong to the point of suicide, someone who was bullied, cyber bullied, and in face-to-face contact bullied. One of the things we know, if there would have been a responsible adult involved earlier on in the process, in almost every case, the end result would have been much different.
And I think that's true, even not just in suicide, but other crimes too that we've seen that have unfolded as well. If there would have been someone involved,
and also talking about parents who are concerned about their children being bullies, as Jenna mentioned, it's very difficult because I think sometimes with our children and certain behaviors, there's a certain amount of denial, and it's perfectly natural because whether it's fair or not, we feel it reflects on us as parents. So if I have a child that's bullying, there's the assumption that I'm a bad parent. So one thing that we try to do is to work with the parents of bullies to kind of break through that and sort of a hate the sin, love the sinner concept, and to arm the parents of a bully with strategies and let them know, we just don't think you guys are bad, and so go away, but to try to help them too.
To think about bullying behavior not necessarily as something that we're incapable of or our own child is incapable of, but to acknowledge the fact that we're sinners. Yes, we're baptized children of God, but we're also sinners, and sinners are capable of any kind of behavior, whether it's bullying. It's hard to think sometimes, oh no, I could never do that. But then to sit back and look at how we've acted as sinners and interacted with others and realize that there are times throughout our lives that we have demonstrated some form of bullying as well. And to acknowledge that, to confess that sin, to be forgiven of it, is what frees us from that. And I'm sure, as you were describing here in the situation with the parents, to give them that opportunity to acknowledge that sin, to confess that sin, to be forgiven, and to know that it doesn't end there, that you're free now. And it just because your child was demonstrating that behavior does not mean that you are not a baptized child of God.
Right.
It means that as a baptized child of God, you're also forgiven, and your child too.
Gary here, but once we were doing the workshop just recently at the LCMS youth gathering in San Antonio, you know, a couple of rooms of 500 kids and leaders. And one of the things that struck me was, as we were working through the process, and we really used some of the language from bullying and the bullied and the bystander, as we talked, as we adults and students were able to recognize that at some point in our lives we've played all three roles, and there's actually a sinful component in all three. How can the one being bullied be sinful, doing something wrong? Well, we had a number of victims in the room that sort of said the anger that they harbor and then how they take that out on others was sort of their the humanness that came to the table. And obviously, those of us that have bullied people, even our own kids at times, with aggressive behavior or coercion as a parent, that's just as wrong as some of the activities that we see going on in other places. And the bystander, well, anytime we just let wrong behavior go on, of course, there's a wrong component to that. So, I think you're right. In acknowledging our own part and our own humanness and confessing that, being forgiven from it, does give some power to move beyond that, no matter what part you played in the bullying picture.
Absolutely. Let's talk about now since you brought it up, let's talk about the child who is the victim of bullying. What can you do as a parent when you suspect that your child might be the victim? Byron, what are your thoughts on that for parents who suspect their child might be bullied at school or elsewhere?
I would say first it starts with support, being a support and someone that really listens and is able to identify, you know, what's going on with your child, and if there are, excuse me, certain signs, stress, change in school patterns, depression, anxiety, and to be that support and to be able to be an advocate for that, for your student, and as well as to let them know that it's not right to mm-hmm. be bullied, or to be the bullier, or to be the bystander.
And if we're talking about teens and puberty, changes, you know, are going on with hormones and things like that. So looking for signs of depression and changes in behavior, you could really get lost trying to figure out what's going on.
Difficult.
So looking for some of those signs in conjunction with other things.
Yeah, I would say, you know, maybe change in sleep patterns, change. Student is an A student and all of a sudden is a D or a F student. Mm-hmm. Just some, you know, again, I think part of that is I see often that parents are more friends to their children than they are parents. And really being a parent, being a role model, and understanding your child, knowing, you know, their patterns and what's going on in their lives. Who are their friends? Who are they going to the movies with? And, you know, how are they doing in school?
Mm-hmm. I think another thing worth noting is the shame component in bullying. And I think a lot of students and children are hesitant to admit to their parents that they're having trouble at school. And so really just being a listener, even as a parent, not someone who automatically has all of the answers, but someone who's just a place that that student can kind of vent about things going on, I think can really be vital.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Byron brought up a good point about sleep patterns. I've noticed in working with parents, sometimes they find out, much to their dismay, their child is on the internet all night, Facebook or iPad, what have you, after they've gone to bed. And then so they're almost, it's like an itch they have to scratch. You know, they're being victimized, and yet they must continue to get online. And so there's kind of a cycle of behavior there for both bully and victim. And to help the victim find other ways of support and to realize it's okay to disconnect, not listen to those voices, is very important.
Gary, what are your thoughts for parents who suspect that their child might be being bullied?
Yeah, I totally agree with what's been said already in terms of being the listener, of pursuing it, not just dismissing it. You know, I remember a couple of cases growing up, being chased home and by you know, more the physical bully from the class at school, and almost, you know, my brother and my sister saying, "Oh, you probably deserve it." You know, that shooing off of, "Well, what did you do to deserve it?" kind of thing. And I think there's a component of that for some kids today where it's almost like, well, you know, it's not that big a deal. They called you a name or they did something. I think it's really important to validate the child who feels bullied. And again, I do want to say, and I think Dan and I agree here, sometimes it is an overused term. It's what we would call bullying, or some people would call bullying, really is it's not to that level. It's not an ongoing thing. It is a, you know, one-time event that we can sometimes blow out of proportion, that could be dealt with on a one-to-one level much quicker and easier. But I think for the parent that has a child that is being bullied, to not dismiss it, to give them a voice, and to start to give them some strategies on how not to listen to those voices, and to support themselves with voices that are positive and friends that will help stand up for them and protect them, is really important.
And I agree with what Gary's saying, but I also feel that we as professionals need to educate parents and children on what healthy relationships look like. And I think Gary touched upon it earlier, the relational aggression. How do we reduce that? That intent to hurt someone by harming their relationship with others, the subtle things, the eye rolling, the shoving when you walk down the hall. And, you know, getting back to what's an acceptable social norm and what does a healthy relationship look like? I'm not sure that children now, again, with the social medias and the videos and the violent video games, truly understand what a healthy relationship, the components are to have a healthy relationship.
Mm-hmm. We have an email from Julie. She says it's a social sin problem that knows no bounds. It's difficult to deal with no matter what the age of the person who is being targeted by a bully. Talking about how children who are bullies who are not dealt with certainly grow up into adult bullies as well. What are some of the ways that Byron and Gary both have mentioned teaching parents, teaching adults how to be empathetic, how to develop healthy and good relationships. What are some of the ways that that you've gone about that? We'll go to Byron and Jenna and Gary, and then and even take a look at what maybe you might be doing at Lutheran South as well. So Byron, what are some of the programs you or the resources available to parents to start teaching them about to help them teach children about healthy relationships?
First, it starts with the collaboration, and that's with our administration, myself, and not just within the school, but with the communities, with the families, with other mental health professionals. I think that's important to have, you know, a sounding board and people to talk with. Dan mentioned the empathy, education, awareness, you know, what does bullying look like, endless advocating for students and families that we work with, and understanding that school is just one life domain that a child has to live in. You know, there's home, community, safety, mental health, legal aspects, to really get to understand, you know, that family all around, not just from the school. For some of our students, school is a safe haven. Mm-hmm. So we want to make sure that school is a safe and healthy environment, physically and academically, so they can be successful as well.
Jenna, any resources for families, for parents to help them teach their children about healthy relationships? Obviously modeling good relationships.
Some of the resources I've used, and I really appreciated what Gary said about teaching that empathy piece. I've used a curriculum called Teaching the Social Emotion of Empathy, and that's been really good with some of the younger elementary-aged kids. Also, I really see the value in running small groups, and I've worked off of a curriculum called the Teen Relationship Workbook that talks about healthy teen relationships on all levels, on the peer level, on the dating relationship level, and then really just other small groups within the school where you can focus in on friendship and social skills and build those networks seem to have mm-hmm. have contributed to some success.
Gary, what is Courage for Youth doing to teach healthy relationships and empathy?
One of the things we do is model what healthy discussion and understanding looks like in a relationship. I think the modeling component is so important because, let's be honest, you know, there's a lot of parents that their toolboxes are a little bit shallow in terms of that themselves. So where are the kids going to learn some of these things? And I think it's one of my goals as I work with parents is to put one or two more tools into their toolbox and helping their kids. And so one of the voices pieces that we have is to do just that, is to help kids talk to one another. Very basic listening, understanding, responding skills, even with kids that they might not normally sit with in a classroom. The SCREAM program that we run for grade sixes and sevens, each letter stands for something. So strength is on day one, where the kids actually do a strengths explorer survey online, and similar to a spiritual gifts inventory, they get to see some great things about themselves in terms of what am I really good at. But they also get to see and experience those in other people, even kids that they may not have even liked so far in their classroom. They come to appreciate that actually they have something to offer that I might not even have noticed before. I've learned something else about them. So the course of the week, we spend some time investigating each other's lives, if you will, to understand where they come from, some of our background, some of the strengths and things that we are involved in. We've seen great success in a classroom that was sort of riddled by bullying behavior, more than one classroom experiencing this, by just having the kids go through some very simple exercises in understanding each other. And it's amazing what that can do to break down some barriers. So the C, or the S, is for strength. C is for character, where we look at values and how values and character come into being hand in hand with each other. Our behavior actually says a lot about what things are important to us. We spend a whole day educationally reviewing and managing media and teaching kids responsible, ethical online behavior, and to end with a class debate on whether parents and what role parents should have in their media. It's amazing discussion with kids to let them just take that piece and rip it apart. The A piece in Scream is about authentic alliances. You know, what components of a friendship, of relationships are important to you, whether it's with your coach, with your teacher, with your parents, with your classmates. And again, there's a lot of wisdom in these kids when they say what's really important to you and let them talk and listen to each other. To give them that form is pretty incredibly revealing. And then on the last day of Scream, we do My Life is My Influence, which really is about hero stories where they learn that with what God's given them and the relationships that they're in, they can actually be a hero to someone else to help them and assist them to be all they can be there too. So I think that it is really about the relational aspect of teaching kids basic relationship skills, and the empathy piece is so important.
And Dan, what about that in the high schools? What types of what things are offered, or how do you go about teaching empathy? How do you go about building that quality, that character? How do you do that in the high school?
Well, I was going to be very sarcastic and say I threatened them, but I don't think on a serious note. First of all, we're blessed with just amazing families and kids, people that want their children to be raised up in a Christ-like environment. And so that gives us an extra leg up, if you will, on this issue. We have things such as mentor-mentoree programs. Every incoming student is assigned with a current student. And it's not just for the first few days, like a welcoming committee, but it's ongoing throughout the year. Also, in our worship life, we have small devotion called Kairos Groups, and that's an excellent, it's student-run, student-led. And then we really encouraged our families to be advocates and not adversarial with us. And it helps that 75% of our student body is involved in extracurricular activities. Mm-hmm. So we have a lot of filters there to pick up issues.
And a lot of opportunities to build, it sounds like, to build community, the small groups. It sounds like every one of you have mentioned small groups in some way to help develop those skills, that empathy. So.
We also, and Gary stole my thunder, I think with the book I have it in front of me, it's called The Bully, The Bullied, and The Bystander. Our teachers have access to this book, and we also, I'm connected with the Megan Meyer Foundation. It's a cyberbullying program where her daughter committed suicide in 2007 because of a fake MySpace account. And so there's also, and then School Reach, it's a program for parents to get involved and report cyberbullying as well.
Excellent. Well, I really appreciate all of you spending time with us today. Today's program is being recorded. It'll be archived and posted on the website on KFUOAM.org. So we'll post links to your organizations as well, for Lutheran Family and Children's Services, Courage for Youth, and Lutheran High School Association here in St. Louis. So if you want to get in touch with any of these folks or find out about the resources that they have to offer, we can post that on our website as well. We really appreciate all of you spending some time with us, and Gary, for hanging in there on the phone with us long distance. We really appreciate it, and getting up a little bit earlier and getting in the office and getting some time in with us today. Thanks so much for joining us today, Gary.
Pleasure to be a part of the discussion. I look forward to continuing the discussion, hopefully on another day.
And thank you, everybody in the studio, for being here today. It has been a joy talking with you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
All right. Well, stick around for Faith and Family coming up next, Moments of Assurance. But later on this week, actually tomorrow, the last day, we're going to be talking about, we're having our first Moms Roundtable. So we're going to talk about kids and media, which obviously we started that discussion a little bit today. We're going to talk about kids and media from the mom's perspective. Three moms, I guess you could call them professional moms, and we'll hear from them about how they approach TV, movies, and internet at home from a mom's perspective. Now, obviously, I'm not a mom, but I get to help, moderate the conversation. Looking forward to joining you on Faith and Family tomorrow.